What is up, sports fans? Welcome into this finally Friday edition of The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Got a lot to talk about, some exciting things happening in college football. It could be tied to something that we talked about a couple of days ago. We'll get to that a little later, but let's start. In the NBA playoffs last night, Boston cruised to a 2-0 series lead. Take a 126-110 win over Indiana in that game. Jaylen Brown, massive for the Celtics. 40 points in that game. I mean, absolutely incredible there for them. Jason Tatum, Derek White both scored 25. So right there, out of the 126, you've got 90 between those three players. 90 of the 126 points scored by Boston in that game last night. Just from Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Derek White alone. Celtics were down early, 27-22, go on a 20-0 run, and end up taking that 42-27 lead and really just never looked back. Obviously, the big story coming out of this game is Tyrese Halliburton left the game in the third quarter with a hamstring injury. It's his left hamstring that was bothering him in that game. He had to leave, and his status is actually still up in the air for Game 3, so might be without Tyrese Halliburton for a couple of games there, which is not good if you're Indiana. But also at the same time, and I heard this being talked about on ESPN Pensacola as I was driving in this morning to the studio to do the show. They were talking about, oddly enough, how Boston in every round of the postseason has faced a team that's had their superstar go down or just not be a part of the team because he was already injured. Jimmy Butler in the opening round with the Miami Heat. Then you move on to the Cavs, had a couple of their big key players out. And now here we are with Tyrese Halliburton leaving the series, and nobody really knows quite yet how long he's going to be out. Because like I said, still up in the air. Man, you look at this, and we talked about it on the show yesterday when we talked about this game heading into last night. It was a must-win for Indiana because it would be very hard if Boston jumped up to a 2-0 lead in this series. It would be very hard for them to come back and win this because they would have to go into the Garden there in Boston and win games. And that has been very hard for teams to do really in the regular season, but also especially in the postseason this year. So I really do think that Boston getting this 2-0 lead, look, I try not to go ahead and you know, count my chickens or before they hatch or count my eggs before they hatch, whatever the saying is. But yeah, it's going to be tough for Indiana to come back in this series and win the series. Are they going to get a couple of games? Are they going to make it interesting? Yeah, sure. I'm sure they probably will. They're a talented team. They didn't get to the Eastern Conference Finals of the NBA for no reason. They are a talented basketball team. They will get a couple of games in the series. I don't see it being a sweep, but I just think Boston's just too good. And the conversation is, you know, when Porzingis goes out early in the playoffs against Miami, the conversation is, oh, how does this affect Miami moving forward? Is this going to be a bad thing for Miami moving forward? And we've seen that, no, it wasn't. It didn't even faze them. They went on to continue to run through and take care of business against Miami, and they took care of business against Cleveland in that following round, and now they've got an opportunity against the Pacers. So despite the injuries that Boston has faced that you may think it slows them down, they just get better each and every time they touch the court. And I think right now, Boston having this 2-0 lead, I just think that's a little bit too much of a task, especially if they don't have Tyrese Halliburton. Like, let's say if Halliburton is out a couple of games because of that that hamstring injury, then that is definitely going to put them even more behind the eight ball against this very good Boston Celtics team. I was still stuck in the series with New York. I was still stuck in the semifinals, not the Eastern Conference Finals. But no, it'll put them even more behind the eight ball against this very good Boston Celtics team. And they're going to have to find a way to win some games on the road in Boston if they want a shot. But like I said, that is going to be a lot easier said than done. In the NHL, we had game one of the Western Conference Finals for the Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Edmonton getting the double overtime win, 3-2 over Dallas. Connor McDavid kind of got the team in a little bit of hot water early on in overtime. Got a penalty, ended up in the penalty box, and they bailed him out, though. They shut down the penalty play in overtime, and, of course, he returned the favor by 32 seconds into the double overtime period. scoring the winning goal. So congratulations to Edmonton and the Oilers on taking that 1-0 series lead. And if you ask me about this series, I think the winner of this series is just lining up to lose the Stanley Cup playoffs to whoever comes out of the East. Right? I mean, if you just look at the Florida Panthers, the way they're playing, if you look at the New York Rangers, and we'll talk about game two of that series because that's coming up later on tonight. So we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But if you look at the Panthers and you look at the Rangers, they're better teams, right? So I think whichever one of those teams come out of the East is more than likely going to be your Stanley Cup champion. I don't think, and that's not a knock. It's not a knock to the Stars or the Oilers. I think they're both quality teams. Again, just like we talked about with the Pacers, they didn't get to the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals for no reason. These teams didn't make it to the NHL Western Conference Finals for no reason. They are good teams. They are good organizations. They've got a lot of talent. But that talent just doesn't stack up well with the Rangers or the Panthers. So I think when you look at this, the winner of this series is pretty much playing for second place. At least that's how I see it, just because I think the better teams are on the eastern side of the NHL playoff bracket, as they have been for, a good solid 7, 8, 9 years now? I know the western side got it last year with Colorado, but Vegas, and then Colorado, a year or two before that? So I know the Western Conference has had their opportunities, but it's been a lot of teams from the Eastern Conference lifting the Stanley Cup the last few seasons for the NHL, and I think it's probably going to be the same again this year. But like I said, we'll talk about Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NHL coming up in just a minute. We've got Game 2 in the NBA of the Western Conference Finals, Dallas and Minnesota. Of course, Dallas battled back within the last, 3 minutes of that game on Tuesday night to take that victory in that 1-0 series lead. Very close game in that. What was the final score in that? Like 105, 102, something along those lines. You know, for Minnesota, you got to look at how you played in game one, going back and watching the film. You've got to look at that and you've got to go, you know what? We played really good basketball up until those last couple of minutes. And those last couple of minutes are what did us in, and we struggled, and we could not find a basket, and we let Luka and we let Kyrie take over those last few minutes. And they end up pulling out a close win. If you're Minnesota, your mindset should be, you know what, let's play game two exactly like we played game one, but finish it this time, right? Because if you look at how Minnesota, if you look at how the Timberwolves played in game one, they played a great game. It's not like they played bad. They just had that little hiccup right there at the end. They allowed Dallas to kind of hang around. They had opportunities to put Dallas away, but they allowed Dallas to kind of hang into that, and the Mavericks eventually came back, took the lead late in the game, and go on to win the game. But if you're Minnesota, you got to look at it and say, we didn't play poorly. We played good. We just have to finish. And if they can finish, if you know, Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, if all of those guys can find a way to harness what they had in game one, while also finishing, we're going to be talking on Monday morning about how this is a tied series at one game apiece. And we'll be getting ready for game two. So, game three. I really do think for the Minnesota Timberwolves, all you got to do is play just like you did in game one, but finish. Right? Limit Kyrie and Luka as much as you can, because you're not going to shut them down. They're going to get theirs. They're superstars. They're going to get theirs. But you can limit them as much as you possibly can. And if you can do that, you're going to have a great opportunity of tying this series up. For the Maverick, Jason Kidd talked about it when the game was over. He talked about how this team, he never really worried about this team in game one against the Timberwolves because they never panicked. They trusted in each other no matter how good they were playing, no matter how bad they were playing. They trusted in each other. And he knew that because they trusted in each other, they would have an opportunity to win that game. Just keep doing that. Keep trusting in yourself. It's worked wonders for you in the postseason. And we talked about it. Was it Wednesday on the show, coming out of the game on Tuesday night? About how against OKC in the semifinals for the Western Conference in the NBA playoffs, they had some adversity. They had some things that maybe necessarily didn't go their way. That series did not start out well for them. but they trusted in each other. They had each other's back. And Kyrie and Luka ended up doing exactly what we expect them to do. So because of that trust that this team has, that chemistry that this team has, I think Dallas, all they've got to do is just keep playing the way you're playing. Even if you're down in a game, or if you happen to drop this game by 20 points, keep doing what you're doing. Keep trusting in each other. Because when you trust in each other as a team, that makes you stronger as a team. And we've seen it before with the Timberwolves in their series against the Nuggets. Sometimes with them, their supporting players don't play up to par, and it makes it a little easier to shut them down. And when you start shutting down a guy like Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns is not stepping up, and you're not getting anybody else to step up for the Timberwolves, especially on the offensive side of the game, that makes them very, I don't want to say easy to beat, it makes them very susceptible in games. It makes them very vulnerable in games. So if you're Dallas, just keep playing the way you're playing, and you should be perfectly fine. Moving on now, let's see. We've got some news from the NFL. I thought this might come when the season was over. I wasn't really expecting it this offseason, but hey, if you're going to do it, why hesitate? Just go ahead and do it. The Las Vegas Raiders extend the contract with Max Crosby. Yeah, they are extending his contract. He's actually getting a $6 million raise. He's been to the Pro Bowl 3 times. And I think it's smart, because what the Raiders are doing here is they are locking down this pass rush that is arguably the best pass rush in the NFL, right? They brought in Christian Wilkins from Miami to go with Max Crosby. Max Crosby already was a dynamic player, but you add a guy like Christian Wilkins on that line, suddenly where an offensive line could just focus on Max Crosby, now they've got to focus on multiple players, right? Now you've got to worry about Christian Wilkins. Now you've got to worry about another linebacker coming through on the backside that you're not paying attention to. It adds more worries for an offensive coordinator and an offensive line coach to have to block this team up in the front seven. So I think it's genius for them to lock them down, and especially when you're in a division that has Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, you got to lock them down. Because if you beat the Chiefs, if you beat the Chargers, it's because you shut down them their play at the quarterback position. So I think it's smart, and I'm very curious to see just how good this front seven is going to be for the Raiders. I think this front seven, I think the defense, honestly and truthfully, is going to carry this team. Not just because they have a new defensive-minded head coach with Coach Pierce, but I think that this team is really going to be led by defense also, because really on the offensive side of the ball, they don't really have much. You know? Like, there's not much there, so they're going to have to rely on defense. So signing Max Crosby to a new deal, giving him a $6 million raise, keeping him around for a little while, definitely the smart thing to do there with that. Some other news from the NFL. Daniel Jones kind of came out in an interview yesterday after OTA practice and was like, yeah, you know, I wasn't necessarily fired up and happy about the flirtation that the Giants had with the quarterback position. And looking at possibly drafting a new quarterback. I understand it's a business and that things like that can happen, but I wasn't necessarily jazzed about it. Rightfully so. I mean, kind of the same thing with Kirk Cousins in Atlanta. It's kind of a slap in the face that if you're the guy and then they go draft somebody else, it's like, okay, you're already planning for me to either A, fail or not be here long, or both. So, you know, it is kind of a slap in the face for teams to do that. So I understand where he's coming from, but also at the same time, if you're Daniel Jones, the difference between Daniel Jones and Kirk Cousins in this situation is Kirk Cousins has performed well at other teams he's gone to. I mean, he did good with the Vikings in Minnesota, and he's expected to do pretty well with the Falcons there in Atlanta with the weapons they have, like Kyle Pitts. So, them drafting the quarterback is kind of a little more of a head-scratcher, whereas with the Giants, Daniel Jones hasn't really produced for them. Right? I mean, he just has not been the quarterback they thought he was going to be. So they do need to kind of start looking in a new direction, because it's been, what is it, 4 or 5 years in the league? Something along those lines for Daniel Jones, and it just still has not clicked for him. So yeah, he's going to be a guy that they're going to be looking to move on from. So I'm not, he should understand that this is coming, right? Like, look at the landscape of the NFL and how it works. For quarterbacks that are in your situation who play and who execute at the low level that you do, or maybe low level is a little harsh, at the mediocre level that you do, yes, you're going to be replaced eventually. It happens to every quarterback in that situation. Heck, it even happens to good quarterbacks sometimes. They have a bad season, but there's some hotshot rookie behind them. That hotshot rookie slides in and takes the job. So Daniel Jones doesn't have anything worth being surprised or upset over. His play on the field is what led them to this point, to where they had that flirtation with drafting a quarterback inside their the top 10 of the NFL draft just a month or so ago. It's your poor quarterback play that led them to that position of wanting to possibly look at bringing in a new quarterback. So for Daniel Jones, he doesn't have anybody to blame but himself. He can't be mad at the front office. He can't be mad at the organization. You don't want them to bring in another quarterback and replace you. Play better. I mean, it's that simple. It is that simple. Sticking with the Giants now, they are going to be featured on Hard Knocks. And the thing about Hard Knocks now is kind of building a reputation, because dating back to 2021, the teams that are featured on Hard Knocks did not win the Super Bowl. Now, granted, I will say I think there are other reasons the Giants probably won't win the Super Bowl other than just being on Hard Knocks. But this is definitely an interesting move, I think, for an organization in the NFL that is, as we were just talking about, looking for potentially moving to a new quarterback and could potentially even be looking for a head coach next year. I think this is an interesting move to bring in Hard Knocks and have the cameras around and all of that stuff. Will it be entertaining? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it could potentially be a massive dumpster fire, and winter dumpster fires not entertaining. Well, I guess if you're a part of the dumpster fire, it's not entertaining to watch, but you know what I'm saying. So as far as the Giants go to be on Hard Knocks, I don't know. It seems like in a situation where you're trying to focus on what you need to do to help rebuild your organization, rebuild your program up to what it was when you were competing for Super Bowls with Eli Manning as your starting quarterback. It just seems like Hard Knocks might not be necessarily the right decision. But you know what? We've seen teams take on Hard Knocks, and we've had this conversation before, and they've actually gone on to have a pretty decent year despite being on Hard Knocks. So I don't know. I mean, at least, hey, if they fire Dable in the middle of the season, at least we'll get it on Hard Knocks, right? It'll be a nice little episode there. And who knows? We may see them bench Daniel Jones on there as well, because, yeah, both of those probably going to be happening for the Giants at least at some point in 2024, whether it's during the season or the offseason, it's going to happen. Circling back around now, we've got game two of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Rangers and the Panthers tonight. Rangers, can they get back on track? We talked about it the other day after game one. Started the playoffs 7-0. Looked like they were just going to bulldoze through everybody. I mean, they sweep the first round. They get 3-0 lead on the Hurricanes. And you think, okay, let's just go ahead and give the cup to the Rangers. But they've lost 3 of their last 4. They've kind of sputtered into these games. And you got to wonder if fatigue and maybe some injuries, some minor injuries, might be playing a part in this. They've got to step it up, though, and get ready for this tough game against a pretty good Florida Panthers team that has arguably one of the best goalies in the entire NHL between the pipes. So I think the Rangers are in a kind of a similar situation. We talked about the Pacers heading into last night's game 2 of that series in the NBA postseason. I think that New York is in a must-win, because if they go down to Florida 2-0, I mean, we saw it with the Lightning. Lightning jumped out to a quick 2-0 series lead in that, or what was it, 3-0 series lead, something along those lines. Tampa was able to kind of battle back and win a couple of games and make it a little bit more of an interesting series. But even in the second round against the Bruins jump out and have that big first win of the series, and you're like, okay, here we go. This could be very interesting. And then Florida just takes control of that series and goes on to dominate. You can't let a team like the Florida Panthers get a 2-0 lead on you, because if you do, there's a good chance that you're going home and not continuing on through the playoffs. So if the Rangers want to prove that that 7-0 start in the postseason is not a fluke, look, we know they're a good team. That's no surprise. They've been a good team all season. But can you finish in the postseason? Can you do what no other New York team has been able to seem to do in the postseason this year? Because the Knicks sure as heck couldn't do it. They couldn't finish in the postseason. So can the New York Rangers do it? Start off 7-0, then you lose three of your last four. If you go down 0-2 to this Florida Panther team, it is going to be a very tough hole for you to climb out of. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. And, of course, with tonight's game between the Mavericks and the Timberwolves and this game between the Panthers and the Rangers, we'll talk about it all coming up on Monday's Glass Half Full. So be ready for that. Some news out of college football. This is some pretty cool news right here. I like this as a concept and what could be happening moving forward. The NCAA and the Power 5 conferences, so that is – you know, well, pretty much now it's the Power Four, but there is still a Pac-12 with like three or four teams in it. So we'll include them. The Pac-12, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC. All of those five conferences have agreed to a settlement that will allow schools to potentially directly pay players. So basically what's happened, the nation's five biggest conferences, like I just went through, and the NCAA, they agreed to pay nearly $2.8 billion to settle a host of antitrust claims. They had some antitrust issues, and this decision to settle those actually can start kind of directing millions of dollars to the athletes from the university itself. So we were talking about Jaden Rashada and the situation with him suing Billy Napier and the University of Florida, and really how it was more on the collective that was doing that deal that really is it's no longer being used and no longer in service, because that collective was disbanded and now they have Florida Victorious down there in Gainesville. This takes away the collective side of things. This makes it to where you are dealing, the university is dealing with the athlete directly. And I think it's great, because you sit here and you talk about the situation, and I think the Jaden Rashada situation between Florida and him, I think it's a great, great, great thing to look at here as an example, because this was a situation where he sat down with the collective and they worked out a verbal agreement to get paid $14 million to come play at the University of Florida. The collective then decided to pull the offer back and not proceed through with following through on their offer. That is what led to Jaden Rashada decommitting from the University of Florida and going and playing for Arizona State last year. So I think when you look at the way this deal played out, with that collective offering the deal and then pulling the deal back off the table, now you're going to have a situation under this new ruling and this new way of doing things for the NCAA. It gives the power back to the university and to the athletic department. They're not having to rely on collectives, because here's the thing. If you listen to any of these SEC coaches right now, and this is one of the reasons why Nick Saban decided to go ahead and retire, it's dealing with NILs and collectives. Because now, this time of year that we're done with spring ball, guess what these coaches have to become? Salesmen. They have to go hit the road standing up in front of boosters. And it's not like where you used to have the head coach of a team come talk to the booster club in your local town, right? It's not like that. When Billy Napier comes down to talk to the Gator booster club here in Pensacola at Seville Court or wherever they decide to hold it this year, whenever that happens, it's not going to be about rah, rah, yeah, we're looking forward to this season. It's going to be, how can we help the collective? How can you help the collective? You can make a donation of this amount. Because that's with the collectives. That's how it is now. And you've heard Hugh Freeze, you've heard Sam Pittman, and all of them talk about it on like the Paul Feinbaum show or any other sports talk radio show or TV show that covers college football. And you can hear it in their voice when they talk. They don't want to do this. You know what they want to be doing? They want to be in their office watching film, trying to do what they need to do to get their team better for when the season kicks off here in what, less than 100 days? We're what, 99 days away from the start of the college football season now? They want to be there watching film, working on this, getting better. They don't want to be out on the road selling the collective to boosters, trying to help raise money for that. This is going to give that power back to the university and the athletic department. You know what it's also going to do? It's going to prevent situations like what happened with Jaden Rashada from happening. Because you better believe the university is going to have somebody that is a part of an accounting firm or something like that that is going to know, this is how much we can offer. This is how much we can give. This is how much this player should get. This is how much that player should get. They're not going to over-offer a player like the Gator Collective did with Jaden Rashada. They're not going to do it. I think this is fantastic for the sport of college football. If we are going to pay the players, they deserve to be paid by the college football university program that they are paying for or playing for. Right? You play for the Miami Dolphins, you're getting paid by the Miami Dolphins. You pay for the Atlanta Braves, you're getting played for the Atlanta Braves. Should be that way in college athletics. And I understand there's people out there that are going to say, well, hang on now. These are college athletes, not professional athletes. No, these are professional athletes. They are professional athletes. Don't get it wrong. Go through a day in their life. They are in the training room. They are in the film room. They are in the practice room just as much as somebody who plays on a professional sports team. They don't have the time to go work at Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts for a paycheck part-time. They don't have the time to do all that. And I understand, yes, okay, they are getting a free education. But everything else in their life isn't free. They don't go up to a movie theater with their friends and say, oh, yeah, hey, I'm getting a free education, so I get a free movie ticket. No, they still got to pay for their movie ticket. They go out and take their girlfriend out for dinner. They still got to pay for it. So, I mean, I'm sure there's probably some places that are owned by boosters that are, you know, the little wink, wink. Ah, we got you covered. I'm sure if a Florida Gator football player walks into Steve Spurrier's restaurant in Gainesville right there off of I-75, they probably get taken care of pretty well when they're in there and don't get a bill. But if they go to a Ruby Tuesdays in Ocala just down the road another 30, 45 minutes, oh, they got to pay the bill. So, yeah, they need a little something, something on the side to help them out. Now, do they need $12 million? Probably not. Probably not. We're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-old kids here. But they don't have the time to go get jobs and things like that. So I think the university working out a deal to be able to pay the players, I think it's great. It gets rid of the collectives, and it puts it all solely on the university. How it should be if we're going to pay players in college. All right, as we wrap up today's show, it is obviously Friday, and we started a tradition here on this Friday. Didn't really mean to start it as a tradition, but we just kind of seemed to always do these on Friday. So it's become the way we close out each and every show on Friday, and that is for a way too early look at really something. And most of the time, this time of year, it's a way too early look at something having to do with football. We're going to keep it local, and we're going to look at some of the must watch players for the 2024 season here on the high school level for football. And we're going to keep an eye out on some of these players. Look, I've got a whole list on my phone. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 6 players here listed, but I've got lots of players from majority of the schools here in the area. All right. So if you're listening to this and your son plays for a school and we don't mention the school, it's not that we're not showing love to the school. We'll talk about those teams and some of those players a little closer to the season as we get through. This is just some random 6 that I picked off the list that I have, and we're going to go with that. We're going to start Manny Romero, offensive lineman, West Florida High School. West Florida has been a team that's kind of been on the rebuild the last couple of seasons, and one of the big issues for them has been offensive line. Depth on the offensive line, size on the offensive line. So a guy like Manny Romero, definitely keep an eye out for him. He's going to be that big anchor there for those big uglies there for the Jags. And, of course, we've got two for Navarre. We got two for Navarre, and that's I'll get to why we have two for Navarre. Joshua Wilson at the linebacker position, Marquez White at the defensive back position. I put two on there for Navarre because they're both on the defensive side of the ball. And I think for Navarre, a team that has been known so much over the past few years under Coach Jay Walls as an offensive football team, we are going to start to see them transition into being a tough defensive football team, a physical defensive football team. Not that they weren't already, but with Garrett Bagley being the new head coach there at Navarre, I think he is really going to bring in a more physical approach on the defensive side. And I think that guys like Joshua Wilson, Marquez White are going to be crucial for the Raiders this year as they start to move forward there and kind of make that change more towards being that physical defensive football team under Coach Garrett Bagley. Ben Tyner, the running back from Pace. Keep an eye on Ben. They got a couple of other good running backs there at Pace as well, and that fits the mold of what they want to do. They want to be not necessarily maybe a three yards in a cloud of dust type running game, but they definitely want to be physical up front. They want to run the football. They want to wear you down, and a guy like Ben Tyner is going to be key for them in the upcoming season. Brock Stumps, the quarterback in Gulf Breeze. Obviously, that last name may sound familiar. Brock is actually the son of new head coach, Coach Stumps, from Gulf Breeze, who I had the pleasure of talking to a couple of months ago. Very nice guy. Definitely excited to see what he brings to the table there for the Dolphins. And I think Brock Stumps, I got a chance to talk to him as well. It was at the introductory ceremony at Whiskey Joe's out on Pensacola Beach for Coach Stumps. Got a chance to talk to not only Coach Stumps, but Brock as well. Both of them have a vision of what they want to bring to Gulf Breeze as head coach and as starting quarterback. And I'm going to tell you what, right now, look out for the Dolphins. All right. It may take a minute. Obviously, new coaching staffs, but Gulf Breeze has kind of gone through a revolving door of coaches the last couple of seasons. I'm telling you right now, they've got their guy, and he brought baggage with him, and it's Louis. They've got a good quality quarterback there in Gulf Breeze, and definitely looking forward to seeing him play throughout the upcoming season. And Vaughn Howard at Catholic. Look, when you have a player like Vaughn Howard at Catholic, I mean, sky's the limit with him. What do you want to do? You want to line him up, have him take direct snaps. You want to put him in the slot. You want to put him out wide. You want to have him running back. He's an athlete. There's a reason that ATH is next to his name. Does whatever you need him to do and does it exceptionally well. So Vaughn Howard definitely going to be a key piece for that Catholic Crusader team coming up here in 2024. I'm definitely excited for some high school football. And, of course, it's going to be a great season here in the area, as it always is. We have great high school football teams and talent and coaches here in the area. And like I said, with Coach Bagley, Coach Stumps, all the rest of the other coaches here in the area, Coach Summerford, that's going to be getting it going with their programs. Definitely looking forward to that in 2024. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, have a great Memorial Day weekend. And yes, we will have a brand new episode coming up on Monday, Memorial Day. So we'll have that for you. You'll be ready to tune in then. It'll be streaming online at ESPNPensacola.com. This is The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, an ESPN Pensacola podcast. Once again, have a great Memorial Day weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday.